Morning, member. We should start. I can see that there's still some confusion. It will clear up later. It's fine. Morning, members. We should start so that we can have more time to engage on the issues which will be presented before us. But I must start by welcoming the Deputy Minister from that long department. I will reserve it for someone else to say. It's very long. I always face monitoring and evaluation and related matters. welcome, Honorable Obed Pape. I'm sure we're meeting you for the first time in the new portfolio capacity as a deputy minister for that long with department with the Senate. And also welcome Deputy Minister Mafaku, Honorable Ndabeni. We must also welcome our new deployee, Comrade Greg, to the committee. I'm told that Honorable Van Dijk should be going back to police, and Comrade Greg will hold the fort. I hope we are not going to lose you quicker again and so on. But you are more than welcome, Comrade Greg. And everyone here who are here, I can't name all of you, but I must also welcome TCIF board members who are here, led by a board member, the head of the delegation, René Smith. The very interesting thing is that we appoint these board members, but when you see them, then you no longer recognize them. I think when they come for interviews, they change their shape and so on. When they are appointed, then you see the real them. And so we are most welcome and your delegation, Tatu Nkomo, and your delegation. You are also welcome. I always confuse ACA and ASA. You are also welcome. I see the CEO there. You are also welcome. But we cannot forget the mother of MDTA. I'll start with the mother, Mr. Manyi, the CEO for CCIS, and of course the CEO for MDTA who are here. But before we go on with our presentation, we've got apologies from three members here, Honorable Ben Razi and Mutambi. We have apologized for not attending. They might join us later. I will ask probably Uma Morine to introduce the MDDA delegation. But starting with Ubabu Manyi, if there's also GCIS here, just introduce the delegation and go to ASPA and ACA. Someone will have to introduce them. I've introduced this site, so you can introduce that site. But starting with Ubabu Manyi, Tatumani.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Now, here this morning, Chair, I'm here purely as the board member of MDDA. So I'm under the MDDA leadership. Thank you, Chair. I'm all by myself from GCIS, but I'm actually an MDDA board member today. Thank you, Chair.
You must have a name tag. You must put a name tag so that we know, because you can't know which one you are wearing.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Jimmy, for that. Good morning, Chair, and honourable members, our DM in the presidency, our DM in communication. Allow me to introduce the MDDA team. It's myself, a new board member, Rene Alicia Smith, Penyo Nongane, and Jimmy Manier as the three new board members. Alongside me is the CEO of the MDDA, Lumko Mtine, as well as the program director of the MDDA, Kupani Mapiri. I've been asked, given that this is a joint presentation, to also introduce the other members of the team that we will be doing the joint presentation on behalf of. We have Wayne Nider, who's the chair of ACA. We have Odette van der Haar, CEO of ACA. Russell Corey, the CFO of ACA. Kwesi Nkomo, the chair of MAXA as well as ASA. And Tembi Mzibi, who is the CEO of ASA. Our presentation, of course, will be made by the CEO, who I will hand over.
Hi, we are Imo Changuk. I'm Tembi Mzibi. I came with an opportunity to bring it back to my country, we are more than good. thanks very much. I must say, no, we should start with the presentation, but I think we'll be fading on our duty, some of us here, especially the members, to recognize that we seem to be making inroads around these particular matters which we are dealing with today. I'm raising this because it's important that today you have a joint presentation. I think that one is only a milestone in terms of moving forward than previously where you have your separate presentation and so on. So we are hoping that the ongoing engagement between the two of you and so on indeed does take us forward and bring us closer to each other. As we are marching forward in terms of these issues. I've been requested by the Deputy Minister that before the presentation, it just needed 2 minutes. The Deputy Minister from the Long Department with the same name and related matters, just for 2 minutes. This is your first committee meeting as a DM of that department. Just for 2 minutes. I will catch you after 2 minutes.
I didn't ask for any 2 minutes. Now that you have ordered as a chairman, I'll comply. Obviously, the subject matter that we are dealing with was dealt with last year. Now it's a feedback in terms of where the industry and working together with government are in terms of the transformation issues, which were particularly raised sharply in the previous meeting, and then whether we'll be able to see some kind of a trend, an emerging trend that is going to indeed transform the industry. And in a particular way, obviously, the presentation will speak for itself. So I came here because I was absent when they were presenting that due to other commitments. I was out of the country, and I felt, therefore, that let me come and also listen and give support to the entities that obviously report and account to me. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm a Fako and I'm part of the Finnish, really. We are used to you. Over to you for the presentation.
Jefferson, thank you very much, and good morning to yourself and honorable committee members, and also morning to our deputy ministers. I think it's a big day. We have two deputy ministers from our two portfolios, though in the main we report to the one portfolio in the presidency, but of course we work very closely on the related matters with the communications ministry. Sebastian, the presentation will be the slides that we'll talk to, and then some additional points of emphasis from ASA and ACA. The first 14 slides have been talk to the background that we do know, which in the main takes us back from 2002 when there was a parliamentary probe into the business in advertising. And arising from that probe was a whole set of processes that led to the MEC Charter, the Media Advertising Communications Charter, whose chairperson, Mr. Ngwengwe Nkomo, is here. And, of course, they also talked to the different research, the body of research that has informed some of the work and the interventions that we are making, ranging from the trend of ownership and control of media in South Africa done by the MDDA, to a number of the other researches, others by MDG, others independent researches. Also, you'd remember, Honourable Members, that subsequently there was then an oversight visit that was led by yourself throughout the country, and it is in those oversight visits that challenges were raised by the sector, in particular the community media sector, in respect of their accessing or not accessing advertising and the challenges they face in the value chain, including therefore the very basic of them accessing the advertising cake. So we then were called by yourselves here, and last was November, where we spoke to the challenges thereof, and we agreed on some actions to be taken jointly between MDDA, CIS, ACA, and ASA. And we today here to give a progress report in that regard, and we will just speak specifically to those actions. We will go back to background questions if there are any from the members, but we assume that a lot of questions will relate to the specific action points, and we'll speak to those, and I will ask Mr. Mapiri to speak to those point by point in detail. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Honourable Members, as the CEO has indicated, that this has been a journey that we've been walking together from 2002, and more specifically last year when there were these oversight visits, as well as the subsequent hearing in June, on the 14th to the 15th of June 2011, where the Portfolio Committee actually called on the MDDA, ACA, ASA, and the National Consumer Commission to look at the issues that were raised sharply by community media throughout the provinces that the Portfolio Committee was conducting the oversight visits. And the outcomes of that hearing, Chair, is what we want to give the committee an update on. The committee was very clear that the MDDA as well as the ACA must meet, following the outcomes of those public hearings, to agree, to consider and agree on the definitions of community media as defined in the MDDA Act, because what has come out from small commercial publishers is that they are unable to access advertising revenue precisely because there's distortion in the marketplace as to what constitutes community media. Publications that are owned by Media24 and Kexin continue to present themselves as community media, and as a result, there's that kind of confusion as to who exactly is community media. And when the MDDA probes the question and engages with the advertising industry, they would then say they are already spending advertising revenue on community media. And on closer inspection of what do they actually mean by that, it emerges that, in fact, they are referring to the Media24 and Kexin owned publications. As a result, there's that distortion. So one of the key things is around the definition, because the MDDA Act is very clear, it's unambiguous. It defines what constitutes community media and small commercial media. So ours is to be able to agree on those definitions so that the industry is able to adopt those definitions as a way of working. We've agreed that on the 9th of March, the MDDA is going to then present certain a body of proposals to the ACA Executive Committee, wherein a clear way forward will then be charted around those matters that we've engaged, and specifically to also agree on some of these definitions, what we as defined in the Act, and then those agreements will then have to cascade throughout the industry, and together with ACA, we will then walk the path together to begin to popularize these agreements that we have. What actually came out, secondly, Chair, is that the industry had crafted their MEC charter, and this is the charter that the transformation charter that defines the roadmap for the industry. And through the submission that was made last time by ACA, that they actually requested the committee to assist the ACA to engage with GCIS and DTI around these matters to ensure that there is some form of agreement of ensuring that the charter becomes a binding charter that will then commit all industry to those, you know, to those issues that are actually defined in there. This matter, ACA is here today to give committee an update in terms of what has been the progress in that regard. However, there is a general agreement that you know, we have got to walk this path together, and we all agree. Following that, Jay, is that there are matters that in our discussions we then realize that part of the problem is also through the training that happens in the sector. The graduates that come out of the industry schools, such as your AAA, your Vega, and so on and so on, have got very little or no understanding of what the media landscape is in this country. And it is then our role jointly to ensure that we then have to develop some form of a curriculum that will form part of the School of Advertising training that will begin to empower the learners around the structure and the landscape of the media in South Africa, so that the issues of definitions are dealt with even at that level, and many other issues, so that there's clarity. So when people join the industry, they become media planners, media strategists, and so on and so on. They have the advantage of understanding the landscape. The ACA and MDDA have agreed that we will then develop a curriculum and pilot it together. And of course, we'll have to engage in this case AMASA, because AMASA, they are the custodians of the media training that is conducted by ACA's AAA School of Advertising. We've also agreed that we will bring in on board a MixEater to facilitate the process of accrediting this course, because we do not want it to be a AAA MDDA, but it must be an industry-wide training program, so that we are able to also send it to other schools, such as your Vega Schools of Advertising and many others that might be interested in that particular program. It would then have to be an accredited training program in that regard. Chair, there's also a recommendation that came out of the committee that we should, together with the GCIS, work on ensuring that there is some commitment, starting with the GCIS and state-owned entities, to commit to spend some portion of the current advertising revenue on community media as defined in our Act. We have engaged with the GCIS around this matter, and GCIS has already been spending on community radio and community newspapers. But there's a commitment that they will, you know, strengthen that commitment in the new financial year. But we've already seen work in progress in this regard, wherein GCIS has actually asked the MDDA to work together to develop a common database to say who are the qualifying media platforms, qualifying by definition as defined in our Act. And we've provided GCIS with that kind of support, and GCIS has actually ensured that the necessary advertising revenue is actually placed on these radio stations. Of course, there are matters that GCIS is actually raising that we are looking at. There's issues of ensuring accountability, compliance, and so on and so on. And we have reported to the committee the last time that developing the centralized booking platform, and that is a matter that the MDDA board is considering, has been approved in principle, subject to other matters being finalized and consolidated, and this is a process where we are at this moment. And again, the committee was very clear when we proposed that online booking platform that GCIS has to work with the MDDA, and we're happy to report that there is work in progress in that regard. Chair, again, we want to also add that the ACA would want to also speak to the issues around development of the MAC Charter, as well as many other issues that we've asked them to deal with, specifically the ASA in terms of what are the issues, what are the cases that they're handling, and so on, what the nature of those cases are. And I think the ACA will have prepared a presentation to that regard, as well as the ASA on those matters. we've gone a long way, Chair, in terms of facilitating stakeholder consultation following the submissions. We have met with many of the industry bodies, your National Community Radio Forum, your independent Association of Independent Publishers, as well as many other forums that work in the community media space, and continue to canvass their opinion and their views around what are their challenges, what would the solutions that we're proposing, would they be, you know, how far would they go to resolve the challenges that the sector is having. By and large, Chair, there has been overwhelming support of the work that both the committee, the MD, and the industry is actually doing to deal with the challenges. However, there are still other matters that we need to deal with in terms of the value chain of advertising. By that we mean, Chair, that there is other players that are unregulated in this space. We've raised an issue in the past that there are media brokers in this space that create the challenges for community media. And we've identified that as an area that needs to be considered. And again, we submit to the committee that perhaps we need to engage in a discussion wherein, after we've done all this work and there is clearer levels of accountability, we still need to look at the entire value chain from the community media side of things in this regard. So that is a matter that needs to be engaged with. Again, Chair, we've continued to deal with the other media, the Association of AMASA, wherein they have actually asked us to come and discuss these transformation of advertising industry. And on the 1st of February, we then held a round table with them where we discussed what the issues are, because there were suggestions in the media that government was contemplating some form of a law to regulate, to determine a advertising and to a predetermined list. This is how the industry was actually coining it. We had to quickly come in and clarify that there is no such legislation that has been contemplated to regulate advertising, for as far as we know, but we are all working within the confines of what the industry has presented through the MAC Charter and these kind of discussions. So we held that roundtable where we clarified that there is no predetermined list that government is putting across that community media advertising must go to, and also there is no contemplated regulation that government wants to put on the table. However, there has been a process of engagement, a process of dialogue, and we hope that the industry got that message loud and clear to actually put that rumor to rest. We continue to engage with state-owned entities. We did report the last time that the Brand South Africa had committed itself to spend money on community media and small commercial publishers. They have indeed made good on their promise. We are monitoring that in terms of their ad spend. They made a commitment in front of you, Chair, where they said they would want to commit 25% of their ad spend. We continue to monitor, how they've done that. We've also have generated a database for them to say these are the platforms that qualify by way of our definition. And from time to time, we then have bilateral discussions to see to what extent have they actually made good on that promise. Another state-owned enterprise has been the South African Post Office that has also equally made a commitment to spend advertising on this platform. Again, they've also done so. However, there's been some challenges, but those are challenges that we're actually engaging with them on in terms of how their service providers have actually interpreted this entire arrangement. So Chair, those are the broad aspects of things to say. Again, we remain committed and supporting the government view of the centralized booking that GCIS is actually working on, and so on and so on.
Just this weekend I was in India, and this particular centralization appears to be the norm even in the Indian legislative landscape. They are equivalent, which is DAVP, operates in this manner, and we support that, and we think that is going to assist in ensuring that the objects of the MDGA Act are met. The other discussions with the state-owned entities is ongoing, and possibly because I think we need to appreciate that we had our last feedback to FLs, which was in November. So December, January was like, as you know, not active month. But even with that, we have been able to make progress, and some entities are indeed beginning to appreciate the MDDA Act definition, and therefore working with MDDA in terms of how the advertising cake is spread into the sector. Lastly, Chairperson, the last slide. Lastly, Chairperson, though I thought because Namosa is Indigenous Languages Day, I thought we will make this presentation in our Indigenous languages.
You are more welcome. You can make it in Kosa or whatever.
Salutatabula kakhulu uma together the committee and ourselves, we could continue engaging the DTI in respect of the matters related to the MEC Charter that we raised before. There is progress. We now know who to deal with in both the DTI and a person specifically that we're going to be meeting and discuss those matters and take them forward. I will now, Chairperson, ask Kupane to show the slides that ASA will speak to in terms of the respective cases they've dealt with in the year. And I'll hand over to Ms. Kembin, the Chairperson, through you.
Members, this will conclude the first part, but there's another presentation. Probably let's take both of them, then we have enough time to engage. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. We brought some statistics in terms of the complaints handled at the ASA over the last year in 2011. As you can see from our slide, we've had 2,189 complaints last year, which was a 6% increase from 2010. As per normal, we had more consumer complaints, 2,099 consumer complaints compared to competitor, and that really is 96% consumer complaints. Usually it's between 92 and 97% consumer complaints per annum. And we showed a graph in terms of some months where we've had more complaints than the previous year, so that's just a comparative picture between 2010 consumer complaints and 2011 consumer complaints. We've then gone further to just break down the complaints in terms of what happens at each level. As you can tell, that the consumer complaints, the ones that were eventually investigated were 566. In the norm, over a year, we usually have 1/6 of the consumer complaints that are investigated, both competitor and consumer. Out of those 566 that were investigated, 75 were held to have a reason for complaint, and a ruling was made accordingly. 105 were dismissed. 131 were either resolved before we had to make a ruling, or there was a voluntary undertaking from the advertiser, which basically usually entails the advertiser saying that they will withdraw the advertisement and change it accordingly. Okay. It can also be noted that we had last year an increase of 55% in terms of valid consumer complaints compared to 2010. And we had a 13% decrease in competitor complaints. We are still doing our check whether the 55 increase in terms of valid, was it because of the consumer protection, whether people now understand better what they can basically complain about. We haven't yet finalized that, and we'll probably have that in our annual report in terms of what the results were. Okay. We then also did just an analysis of January so that, you know, the committee can get an understanding in terms of the volumes that we handle per month. So from the 5th of January to the 31st of January, we considered 275 consumer complaints and 10 competitor complaints, and 76 were investigated. I have some other stats that are not included in there, in the sense that we actually ruled on 62 matters in January. So that's both competitor and consumer complaints that we ruled on in the month. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Tatuma, I can see you're moving closer to the mic. Thank you, Chair.
Before we get to the ASA one, just as a comment on the ASA one, it is due to the discussion that we've had with this portfolio committee that a decision was taken that we should update the committee on the ASA statistics. Because the chair will recall that the last time we were here, the committee indicated that they'd like to get something more substantial, especially the ASA being the regulatory body that it is. And we hope that by bringing this kind of information to the committee, that we will begin to understand some of the issues that the ASA will be raising, especially in view of the fact that we're now in discussion with the commissioner on the National Consumer Protection Act, as well as funding the consumer side. Because we were told by this committee many years ago that the interest was more on protection of the consumer, not so much on what happens between Vodacom and MTN. This house was interested in making sure that we have systems in place that make sure that advertising is honest and decent and not taking the consumer for a ride, and that's why we're now bringing this kind of statistics. On the ASA side, all right. Thank you. We have done that, Mr. Chairman, as we were asked last time to say these acronyms and abbreviations must be explained. We have done that this time. okay, with the help of the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee, we now have Ms. Piwe Mutsekwa, Director of Marketing, Advertising and Media Buying, delegated by the GCIS to handle MEC SA. You will recall that we used to work with Mr. David Jacobs for quite some time, and David Jacobs was seconded to some other division, and the one anybody that we worked with, other than the solo office of Mr. Mani, we worked with Ms. Togo, but she was not hands-on on the job. Now we have somebody that we're working on with. Having made the promise last year that when we come back, there will be a full report, may we apologize in the instance that the committee had said we should come back in March, which is what I said to Mr. Mtimde that now this is February. We've started the process and we haven't got enough to report on that, but we're looking forward to giving you more. And on the side of the DTI, well, also we have the Mr. Thabo Masombura, who left, and for some time there wasn't anybody, and the chair promised that they will interact with the relevant people. We are happy to announce that Mr. Jacob Maputa, Deputy Director of PEE Partnership and Stakeholder Engagement, has been seconded by the DTI to assist us on the MEP charter. He'll be working with the team. And further, we were sent an invitation by GCIS to a workshop on the amendments, as we are aware, members of this committee, to the BEE Code and Act of Good Practice. The workshop was scheduled for 17 December at Galaga Estate Convention. But unfortunately, because of the confusion of dates, we actually missed out on attending. But we are making sure that we get appraised of the development that happened at that particular meeting. And we are reporting this thing as we say that because we want to give credit to the Portfolio Committee on Communication for not hanging just promise, but make sure that the things that were promised actually happened. We now have people and personalities that we can talk to and communicate with. The relationship that has developed between us and MDDA, I recall fondly that there was a time we sat in this room and we were looking at each other and we were hiding other guys behind our backs to try and see each other. But truly speaking, we've now developed a healthy relationship, and we believe that this is what we need to be doing. There will be differences, but we hope to be able to sit through, work through them before we come to this committee to do the presentation. Well, GCIS have been, in fact, the fathers, shall we say, because fathers don't have the Father's Day, have been the fathers of MEC SA Charter from the beginning, as we indicated the last time, that at the beginning there was Department of Communication, but the GCIS ended up making sure that the process was started and taken through, and can report quite proudly that that association is still proceeding. MEC SA, which is Marketing, Advertising and Communication South Africa, has been that are not here today, but the process has been embraced. The charter, again, has been reaffirmed by members of MEC SA, which, if we enumerated them, would include the designers in this country, would include public relations companies in this country, advertising companies, communication companies, any company that is marketing, advertising, and communication is through the structure that we have, MDDA, part of that process. The last time we were here, I can see my story is back. We were asked to make sure that we don't use these acronyms or abbreviations that nobody understands and nobody knows except us in the industry. We're happy to announce that we have done that. We have chosen the common ones for now, Mr. Chairman. We've also agreed with MDDA that we'll be looking at what the industry uses in general, but in our interaction, we've used the AAA a lot, we've used ACA, and that's what we've tried to explain. The AAA is Association of Advertising Agency. It is no longer there as an association because it has been superseded by the ACA. When it was the AAA, it only had membership open to advertising agencies. When it became ACA, it then opened the membership to people who were involved in communication, because the industry developed to a level where advertising agencies have started owning public relations companies and event management companies, and that's why that was changed. The difference is that the school is still known as the AAA School of Advertising. It's purely a legal situation that, as an industry, we felt we couldn't go and spend all the money and all the time to change the name of the school to make it the ACA school. So the school still retains AAA School of Advertising, not because it's still the Association of Advertising Agencies, simply because that was a trademark, and those of us who've been involved in accreditation know how long the process takes just to get the course accredited. Now, to look at the entire institution could take forever, and that's about the only time where we still use it. ASA, Advertising Standards Authority, also known as South African Advertising Standards Authority, or Advertising Standards of South Africa. Now, the CEO is correcting me here. She's very particular about ASASA. MEC SA, Marketing, Advertising and Communication South Africa, the group that is jointly responsible for the charter as we presented last time. And PRISA, which is another acronym that we use for the Public Relations Institute of Southern Africa. I'm not too sure whether there are any others, but we have promised to update the list and make sure that all those acronyms and abbreviations that are normally used in these sessions are made easier to be understood. In conclusion, Mr. Chair, may I again endorse the words that were said by the CEO of MDDA, that the partnership is working, and we would like to make sure that we align most of the communication and marketing issues together under the auspices of GCIS which we've been happy to do for the number of years that we've been in existence. But more importantly, so that the oversight exercised by this committee should be made a lot easier for us to come in heavy worked out on the issues, so that when they are directed at us, we're able to handle them as a team. And thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Are you fine, Akade? Are you okay? So I've been at the OC also here. I saw a doctor. I'm always in trouble with the spelling. I'll just give it the doctor. I'm not sure which one is the same name between the two, so I'll just leave it there. Very much welcome. We must go through the presentation, which were presented before us. They are all done now. Okay. Before I can see Honorable Ngrutua, she's already firing up. Okay.
Listen, I just wanted to say you are appreciating the fact that everybody is here. And I thought we were going to hear everybody. If Aka says they are fine, we don't know what it means, because we should be saying that. Yes, I would really appreciate if they could tell us what it means.
I'm not sure I launched them, but Aka.
Good morning. We have engaged with the MDDA, and we feel that we're in a good space as far as our commitments that we've made with the MDDA. We feel that piloting the program through the AAA school would be a good start as far as expanding on transformation and understanding of community media. In the same token, we feel that the Portfolio Committee has assisted us tremendously with the MACSA charter, and we are making progress. So we have credited the Portfolio Committee. And I must just state that Ntarim Kwekwe is actually a board member of the ACA. So while he speaks on behalf of the ASA, as well as MACSA, he is also speaking on behalf of the ACA today.
Thank you. Babu Mani, our way to above. Manila, my daughter, I'm a checker, Mani. Thank you very much. But I must say, I forgot that we have not met the new board members after appointing them, and the others appointed through the other processes and so on. I should like welcoming all to this first meeting of yours as board members. I know that Jimmy Mani, in relation of your appointment to the board by the other process. But I'm raising this matter because I received calls after some of the appointments where members were raising an issue that when you submitted name to Parliament for processing, there was no name for Mr. Mani. So how did it happen that you are pronounced as a board member of MDDA? I took for granted at that time that the members understood that we appoint six as Parliament, the other three appointed by the President after consulting the relevant stakeholders. And government also appoint one board member to the MDDA board. I'm just dealing with that matter because it was an issue at one time when we finalized the appointment and so on. Then the other will be print media and broadcasting, which will add one and one from government, and then the six which we appointed, and it makes it nine board members for MDDA and so on. So I just wanted to raise that matter because it was an issue. Actually, the matter nearly come before Parliament, that the parliament has been taken for a ride. We submit new additions on top of the new which we appointed and so on. But thank you very much. I'm most welcome in your new responsibilities. We hope that you continue making MDDA to flourish as it has been doing and so on. Members, it's open for questions, clarities and everything. Honorable Killen, Honorable Sheen, Stein, and Honorable Drogen. Honorable Killen.
Sorry, point of procedure. We had three presentations. Are we going to put questions across all three at once, or are we going to deal with them one by one?
We can start with MDDA. Honorable Killen, don't have anything from MDDA.
No, Chair, except that not all of us understood Mr. Mange's appointment as having sneaked through the cracks. Some of us understood that it came via a different category of nomination. So I just wanted to clarify that because I see Mr. Mange was pointing a finger here at me. And in this instance, I'm totally innocent. So I just wanted to put the record straight. Just a general comment. I think what we've had from the MDDA, it's a good sort of progress report of where we are and of what led up to specific steps that have been instituted, etc., and then obviously also what remains to be done. And from the presentation, at this stage, Chairperson, I feel that I don't have additional questions to pose to them. Thank you. I would like to follow up on advertising standards and policy. Thank you.
Okay. Honorable Singh?
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. And just as to the commit to the other presenters, I'm new here, so if I ask questions, it may just be that I'm ignorant, and ask you to sort of forgive my naivety, perhaps, about what has gone before. I'm concerned a wee bit about the community newspapers. We visited some recently, and a lot of them are obviously struggling financially. People have given up their day jobs and are, you know, begging from family and friends to keep the thing going. And a lot of them are Indigenous language newspapers, which obviously has spin-offs for keeping, you know, the diversity of languages alive. But my concern is that are we, through GCIS and government spending, are we keeping alive enterprises that don't have a financially viable community to support them? I'm afraid of some of these papers being, or also radio stations, perhaps just being a comfort zone for well-connected pals of government who can actually just say, we have this community newspaper, come give us money, come give us advertising, and how will you actually measure that any advertising given to them is actually being an effective spend of advertising money, of taxpayers' advertising money? So how are you going to manage and monitor whether that is valid advertising being placed there, or are we just keeping, you know, these charities alive, or having sort of charitable outlook to keeping these communities alive? I'm also a little bit concerned about getting CETAs involved in training. By and large, the CETAs have been a failure. And, you know, one would think that the industry itself and the various training schools in the advertising and marketing industries are pretty dynamic and pretty on top of things. Do we actually need necessarily to get CETAs involved, which is really just another tax on industry? Yeah, and I'm also a little concerned, and perhaps I'll get on to this later, about the advertising associations' very close alignment with GCIS and the NDDA. I think there should be a healthy separation. While we understand cooperation and working together on charters and defining legislation and all that, but I think that perhaps the relationship is a little too cozy.
Honourable Crockett.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks for your presentation. My question is to the MDDA. You said that the first time when the advertising agencies came to the committee in 2003 or 2002, I'd like to know, was there any transformation since then, 2003 until 2011? Has there been any movement until the intervention of this committee? I'd like to know. I'd like to know as to why it has taken so long to 2011 for such progress to take place. So I'd just like to know the progress in between those periods. Secondly, you brought up media brokers. Quite interesting. I'd like to understand, how does a media broker work? Can you just give an example? How does that affect the community newspapers not benefiting from the allocation made by GCIS or the various government departments? Thirdly, many of the oversights that we have done is to various community newspapers, and they were funded by NDDA maybe for 3 years, for example. So when they come to the end of those 3 years, they then worry how they will be sustaining themselves in the future. So now you are meeting with ACA, ASA, and talking about the MAC Charter. So I'd like to know, will all of this being discussed, I mean, assist the community newspapers? Is it going to assist? So all these discussions, where in the end will it lead to? Will it assist the person on the ground in the community? And then lastly, you spoke about government commitments of about 25% of the allocations made to the various communities media. I'd like to know, has it worked thus far? If you should do an evaluation, would you say that 25% has helped the community media? And then I'd like to know about the MAC Charter. If you could maybe email that document to members as well, so that we could just maybe go through that MAC Charter ourselves, so that we can familiarize ourselves if members have not yet received it. Thanks.
thank you very much. I thought we are battling with labor brokers. They are media brokers. Maybe they are also human beings brokers here. I don't know.
Thank you, Chairperson. While you were on that issue, I'd also like to know what is meant by unregulated players in the industry. I mean, we have all these associations that are supposed to regulate the industry. So how is it possible that we have unregulated players in the industry? But Chair, having said that, and it links up to some of the questions that have been raised, I gather that this is sort of a work in progress. But I also gather that the Portfolio Committee raised very specific issues, perhaps going as far back as 2 or 3 years ago. It's water under the bridge, but a report really should have, as one of the presenters indicated, that they expected to come back in March. When I look at the presentation, a lot of issues here is, like I say, work in progress. It will be done, something will come, but I'm a bit concerned that there aren't any timelines to some of these things. There's talk about an online advertising platform, but the cost-benefit analysis still needs to be worked out. The issue about the commitment and 25% was mentioned as being current, but I think it was also said that they're looking at perhaps a higher commitment for the future. No indication is given, although it has to become effective 2012-13. Now, that's around the corner, and if it hasn't really been sorted out yet, then, you know, it's not going to happen 2012-2013. So in terms of this particular report, my concern is the lack of timelines for the things that have been identified that I think is important to move forward. We can't just leave it sort of up in the air that we're busy working on it, that will be sorted out. I think we need to know when it will be sorted out. That's all. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. They understand you clearly what you are saying. Honorable Brutua.
Chairperson, thank you. I really think a lot of work has been done here. By the way, we come from a situation whereby there was no understanding between MDDA, GCIS, and advertising.
I still remember when the advertising came here. They were really disturbed about how advertising is being handled. I'm very much appreciative of the fact that we have them here today, and they seem to be really understanding each other. I just want to ask a question, Chairperson, that relates to the mandate of the MDDA. When we were in Namakwaland, I was just wondering, I want MDDA to explain to me so that I understand how far in South Africa have they gone. What initiatives are there for the Namas in terms of the language? If they do have any community newspapers, I know that the dominating language there is Afrikaans, but I just want to know if there are any strides being made, maybe to cover the Namas. Thank you.
Thank you. Those were the questions for the first presentation of MTDA, the first one. But as you said, it's a joint venture. I'm not sure they're going to respond jointly, so. But MTDA?
Thank you, Chairperson. May I start with just clearing the one that, if not cleared, it may be a headline. The 25% commitment was not referring to government advertising in general. It was referring to a commitment made by Brand SA at this committee. So it was related to Brand SA. Government commitment is a commitment to increase ensuring that ad spend is accessed by community media, small commercial media, and, of course, any other new alternative media as a way of, one, promoting media diversity, but, two, reaching out to the communities that are served by these media, which in most cases is the very community which is targeted in respect of government services and the historically disadvantaged communities in rural, peri-urban areas. So that's the commitment. And of course, honourable member, you are right that in terms of the timelines of that commitment. But if you look at the MDDA annual report and you look at government commitment in respect of ad spend into the sector, there is improvement. And I'm sure when we present this year's annual report, you're going to see increase again. And we're hoping with this work that we're doing together, which assists, one, professionalize the sector, and two, defining the sector more clearly so that it does not become a report that says so much money is spent in community media, whereas that money is spent in the mainstream media, not community media. So with all those clarities, we think this is going to clear the road, and we will see more and more of the ad spend going into the real community media, and therefore serving the communities that need to access that information, and hopefully therefore assist those communities. Let me then go back to the first question. Honourable member, these media are not charities. These are real needy communication tools that are owned and controlled by the community they serve and are a necessary medium of communication for those communities. It's very important for us to understand that in respect of them. So the support that we give both as government and the private sector is aimed at empowering those communities to have diversity of views and opinions, to be able to participate in the information society and in the democratic discourse in our country, and allowing a two-way communication space between those in power and those communities. So they are a very, very necessary communication medium, and we see what we give to them, the support through advertising, as enhancing that agenda and not enhancing a charity agenda. The question of their continued financial need indeed is a fair question because of the nature of the socioeconomics in those areas. Some of them do not necessarily have a market to access in those areas to sustain them. So they continuously knock at our door. We understand that, and I think that's why this Parliament enacted the MDDA Act, so that we could have an ongoing kind of support that will support in particular those communities that may need the support for a longer time. There are those who need the support just to start up, and after a period of time they're able to sustain themselves. They come back to us maybe for some specific areas of support that are aimed at strengthening them and ensuring that they're able to sustain themselves. So the support, therefore, would differ depending on the different needs and the different realities. The question of CETA's involvement, I'm not sure, Honourable Member, that, I'm talking as MDDA Chairperson, I'm not wearing any CETA cap.
That's the problem, because to my fault, to your fault, membership of CETA, but you can respond.
Yes, no, I'm wearing an MDDA cap. I'm not sure whether we could fairly say CETAs are a failure, even in terms of the new dispensation of CETAs currently. I don't think that has been measured to come to a conclusion that they still a failure and they are a failure. So therefore, maybe, Honourable Member, respectfully, that conclusion is not necessarily a factual conclusion at this stage. If you look at the reconstruct of CETAs and the skills and development needs in this sector, clearly, and they came before this committee last year when we made this presentation, clearly there is a need to work with them, and we see them as going to add value to the both the skills development, the retention of skills, and the growth of the industry at large. And we yet to come back to you and prove that that has happened, and I'm sure, Honourable Member, you'll be comfortable once we give that report. You also asked in respect of the monitoring of advertising. The online booking system is intended to help, one, professionalize this business, two, ensure that it is accountable. You can account, you can be sure that such a campaign was played through media X, Y, and Z, and this is the feedback, this is the proof, and so forth. And the effectiveness of the campaigns, of course, it goes also into the content of the campaign. So that would require different measures to measure its effectiveness. But in general, I think this intervention that we're proposing of an online booking system will help to monitor and ensure that this can be accounted for, and we could therefore be able to provide reports of who it has reached through what media. Your last question, Honourable Member, in respect of the relationships, these are, how would I define them? It's not cozy relationships in the manner you described. These are separate entities with separate mandates and areas of focus, but they do have to work together. As they say, together we can do more. If one entity wants to go this direction and the other goes that direction, we won't be able to enjoy the fruits of the work that we're all doing. So through this relationship, I think we are able, as you can see, that we are beginning to enjoy the fruits, and we think we're going to enjoy the fruits even more. We remain separate organizations. We did a one presentation as a team to show that there is progress in respect of the work done from the previous parliamentary hearing.
It was not to say we are one organization. No, we're not merged. We remain the three, four separate organizations. But in respect of this work, we are together adding value in ensuring that the fruits, the impact of this work is felt by all. So, the rest assured, honourable member, we are working together as different organizations. The other question from honourable member, which was in respect of progress of transformation from 2002, I think we can outline that quite systematically. From that probe in 2002, we were able to have the MEC Charter enacted in 2008, I think it was around August. Clearly that was a milestone arrived, going back from where the situation was. But indeed, as we presented last time, there remain challenges in terms of the compliance, the effectiveness of some of the commitments made in the Charter. And hence, the call for us together with DTI and this committee to make sure that we strengthen some of the mechanisms that are in the Charter. And I think that is going to increase the transformation agenda that is enshrined that Charter. In respect of the specific related matter that we're discussing today, I think progress has been made. One, we are working together as the organ of state and the industry bodies in terms of understanding the market in the same manner so that we're able to report back accurately in respect of who are the players in the market and how is the market performing. The discussion around the definition of community media, I must say, over and above the discussions we've had with the industry bodies, we've had discussions with some specific media owners out of the Big Four, and including with PMSA, which is the Association of the Print Media Sector. And there is progress in that regard. Hopefully, when we come back here, and I'm hoping we'll be called after some allowance in terms of implementing some of the commitments, we will come back and say, now the market understands community media as per the MDDA Act, understands small commercial media as per MDDA Act, and it has therefore reconstructed its methodologies, its systems from ABC, the audit of Bureau Circulation, difficult name, right through to SARF and REMS and so forth, so that we all together able to report accurately in terms of the reality of the market. That progress, I am sure, we are going to achieve when we come back to ourselves. I'll ask Mr. Mapiri to answer the media broker's question. But the other questions in respect of funding, sustainability, and how this intervention will assist sustainability of the sector, I think simply it will assist because after the clarity of who's who, the piece of the cake that would be dedicated to community media will go indeed to community media. The one dedicated to small commercial media will go to small commercial, and the one dedicated to reach out through the mainstream media will go through the mainstream media. That, I think, will benefit the sector because it means they will be able to equitably access the advertising cake and be able to, therefore, have that income and not rely totally on the MDDA grants. Yes, as I said, they will, of course, be differences depending on where each of the projects is located. A project that is in a rural area may only access local advertising if it is there, government advertising, and may not access some of the mainstream advertising available. and therefore those projects may still come back and knock at the door of MDDA. The MEC Charter, I think Mr. Nkomo will possibly elaborate on that question. I think the other points that were raised in respect of the unregulated players, that was in reference to the media brokers, and I think Mr. Mapiri will speak to the media brokers in terms of the impact they have. We're not necessarily saying they need to be regulated, we're just saying there is a challenge, and perhaps some of the challenges that are experienced may require some intervention of some sort, depending on the nature of the problems that are identified. Timelines, I think most of the commitments have got timelines. We're meeting, for example, with the executive leadership of ACA in 2 weeks' time, wherein we will discuss piloting the project with AAA school. We'll discuss how together we then package an approach to further consult with stakeholders in the industry so that there is a common understanding of what is community media, what is small commercial media, the MDDA Act, and so forth. And then subsequent to that, of course, there will be then the course that will be through the school, and which should be an ongoing intervention. The online booking system, we have progressed. Honourable members were here last time, would remember where we were last time, and now we're just finalising the business case, and then we will progress in terms of how we take the process forward, whether we issue tenders, whether we seek some additional funding support from the National Treasury, and so forth. So those are the other external factors that would inform the progress in terms of the online booking system. But all the other commitments, I think they are measured, and they have got time commitments to them. The sitters, we were going to come here with the mixed sitter, for example, but unfortunately, the CEO has a family bereavement, and as such, they could not join us today. Lastly, Memorutua, the question of language, specifically we're asking in respect of the Nama language, we are promoting that all our projects do indeed use the languages that are used in the communities they serve. And in respect of the Namaqualian project, there are commitments made when they were applying for a license, but we're encouraging them to reach out beyond those commitments and to the extent possible go back to amend their licenses to reflect their increased reach to languages available in the area. We also continue to have awareness campaigns so as to encourage more people to come back to us with applications that will serve the different needs served in the languages spoken in the different communities. We can say today, more so today being the National Indigenous Language Day, that most of our projects are in indigenous languages. We have a very specific strategic priority to support projects that are in the indigenous languages, and because we see that as going to be the key to the agenda of media diversity. And as I'm sure honourable members have seen as they were walking through the country, that you have got almost all the languages in print and on radio and on television. Of course, a lot still needs to be done in terms of developing and enhancing that agenda, and we are committed to that. Thank you. Mr. Mapiri, do you want to speak to media brokers?
Yes. The question of the media brokers, I think, has been one that has been raised quite sharply, and it remains a particular thorn on the side of community media, community radio stations, and community newspapers. The media brokers have actually positioned themselves as an external sales arm of the radio stations as well as the newspapers. What they would then do, because of them understanding
the challenges and the complexities that a station out in Limpopo would not have the ability to go and see a media planner in Sandton and present its case. They will then do that on their behalf. In conducting their business, they will then say they represent X number of radio stations and so many other newspapers in these many other areas. And the media planner, who also has a challenge of ensuring that they then place their campaigns in platforms that will actually deliver on the mandate of their brief, will tend to then place the advert through this broker as a go-between, as a conduit between the radio station or the newspaper and their clients on the government department. What has happened over the years is that the media broker one would either not pass on that campaign to the radio station and then come back to their client and generate a report themselves that says, actually, yes, Mulegi Community Radio did actually flight this ad, whereas Mulegi has not even seen that ad making through their door. That's one of the challenges. Secondly, a media planner and a media buyer will then, based on that report that's generated by the broker, will then pay for the services rendered. And that money would not even make its way through to the station. And as we then, what we've then done as the MDD over the years, what we then have asked these brokers to then declare all the money that has been spent through their books so that we're able to publish it on our annual report. They've done that the first year, and all of them, except for one, did not do it in subsequent years. Because what we then do with that information, we send it back to all the radio stations and the newspapers and says, this is what is claimed to be revenue that should have made it to your doorstep. And many of them say, but we've not even seen any of these things. Then they want to hold the brokers accountable. So this is where the issue really lies. And because, again, they remain unregulated, and again, we're not necessarily saying they should be regulated, but we've got to look into them in terms of how they conduct their business, because they remain largely unaccountable. It has been also an issue for GCIS to a point that GCIS, has resorted to even going directly. And you would have noticed that many stations say GCIS makes an arrangement to them prior, and they book and they pay directly. So then they see money coming from GCIS, but then they would not see money coming from other departments, which is where the challenge really lies. And we've engaged with those brokers to say you have got to, be transparent and show that this is where revenue has actually gone. And equally, we're also saying to the radio stations that they must come forward with information, because we would not know if whether these are things that are actually happening. But in our, preliminary investigations, this is what we've discovered. And we made specific references after the hearings. One of the state-owned enterprises made that commitment that they would spend money on community radio, and we then held them accountable to that. And they then gave us information that, yes, they have approved X amount of money for a particular campaign that they've conducted. We then took that information and called every single one of those radio stations that were on the schedule. And to our surprise, half of those stations did not even know that this campaign was booked through to them, and the entity had actually passed on the revenue. We then collected that information and sent it back to them and said, you then need to check and follow up and investigate this matter, because this is where the challenge really lies. So we then saying perhaps we have got to look into the business conduct of the media broker.
Asa Aka.
Thank you, Chair.
It's close to Waka Waka.
let's start by just going back to the CETA question. In terms of accrediting the cost that we are thinking of piloting, we believe that it is a worthwhile cost to pursue in this instance. We will not go into whether the CETA performed or did not perform. What we understand that they have been revamped, and what we understand that for as long as we have them, there is a situation that presents itself for us as an industry. I mean, we could sit here and say, are we in the right CETA or not? But that's not the point. We have a CETA presently. And children, black children, have benefited by being given boundaries by the old map CETA to which we belonged over a period of, I don't know, 3-4 years, Russell? Yeah, 5 years, more than 5 years. That CETA was giving boundaries to black kids to get into advertising, something that we needed and needed solid. And we believe that if that opportunity still presents itself as an industry, we will do that. But in this particular instance, this course that we're talking about, the community media course that we want to pilot, is not an ACA thing, it is not an MDDA thing, it is a national imperative that we want to be doing so that there is common understanding of what we mean by that and how we approach that. Without being disrespectful, we know, as we presently speak, that the Council for Higher Education is sitting with over 2,000 applications for qualifications. We know that. We know the minister is battling to get things streamlined in that area. And we think and we believe that in terms of working with the CETA, that process will be facilitated for us, because we know from the AAA, having an advertising institution, what it takes to get accreditation. And we have people that we've operated and worked with in government through the CETAs, and we believe that relationship should be pursued. On the second question of the GCIS and the ACA relationship being cozy, I think, Mr. Chairman, we've got to understand that there are certain things that we cannot run away from. The national agenda does not belong to the GCIS or the ACA or any other person. It belongs to this country. And when the national agenda says it is important for all South Africans to get together and resolve issues that belong to this country, we cannot be precious and say we're not going to be working with the GCIS, we're not going to be working with anybody else. The ACA has worked with the GCIS from the inception of this project. This process is where it is because of the relationship of the GCIS and ACA, of which we are part as the Association for Communication Advertising. GCIS has never come to us to compromise anything that they stand for in terms of their own mandate, neither has the ACA compromised. But we found common ground that has helped the industry to get to this level, and we're not about to abandon that. We've gotten to the level where, in terms of working out pitches, things that were a problem to the industry, maybe we need to report on this again to this house in more detail. There were issues that were a problem to the industry, where we had pitches that were being organized or tenders that were being thrown out that were not regulated. Between the GCIS and the ACA, we've put together systems that the industry has accepted, including government or state-owned enterprises. And we cannot dump that relationship. If it's too cozy, the third part of it is working. I am not aware that outside of the mandate that has brought us together, that is
very much open at Black Valentine.
No. We know that Valentine has been commercialized. So I just wanted to put that in perspective, that relationship has delivered, and that's why we're sitting with the charter that we have, which has been gazetted as a Section 12 charter. If GCIS was not part of this, all that process, would not have gotten to that level. Right, okay. What happened between 2003 and today? The first thing that happened after we were hauled to this committee a long time ago and wrapped on the knuckles for not having transformation was for this committee to say to GCIS and the Department of Communication that they must take responsibility for making sure that the industry is helped along the road to transformation. We're not going into details to what happened to the Department of Communication, but somewhere in the process, they left us. But when they left us, we just done the various statement together. They were part of the designing of the various statement. From the various statement, then we got to the charter to design the charter. This is a process that this committee had taken special interest in. Because after we designed the charter, we came back and presented to this committee. They called us again to come and present. At the second presentation, there were members of the ACA who had a contra review, who were allowed to present their contra review, including media people, journalists. in this committee. And this committee then mandated us to go and work on all those inputs so that we should come back and present a unified position, which is what we did. And the last time we came and presented that, the committee insisted that we should prepare this for gazetting. We were given names, we were given indications of people that we needed to deal with. I'm not going to get into the details. We then went and did that. And the committee had a special sitting in Johannesburg. This committee had a special sitting in Johannesburg to listen to what we were going to present as the final document. We presented the final document to this committee, and the committee said, go and submit it to DGI. And we did after we were given the stamp of approval. Now, those processes, understanding that we're dealing with ACA, Association Committee on Advertising, ASA, which is a regulatory body, PRISA, Public Relations, MDDA, a National Association of Broadcasters. When we talk about what brought that charter together, we're talking about, maybe over 10 different associations that had to come together. There was one area that this committee was insistent on. Do not go to the DTI and present until you can prove to us that all the stakeholders support this charter. We came back with the signatures and demonstrated to this committee that all the people that were part of this thing were supporting that, and that's how we ended up in Pretoria at the DTI. Unfortunately, personnel breakdown at the DTI contributed to, 3 years of stalling or 2 years of stalling. And we came back to this committee last year when we asked to come back to say, we submitted, we did everything, we came back, we are now going to ready to be code 9, but there is nobody to work with. And this committee said to us, we are committing ourselves to making sure that you get someone to work with. We reported today that we now have people that we're working with who have been seconded to us, as well as the situation that arose at the DTI. So I just want to put that across, that for 2 years they have been, that's why we were here, because for 2 years nothing happened after we gazetted, because everyone we worked with at the DTI, they left every 2 months. We moved from one person to the other and there was no progress. And we believe that this year we should be able to get the Section 9 status. Now, what do we, as a combined MEC charter people, believe in? One, the process that the Portfolio Committee on Communication is responsible for is making sure that all of us who are involved in this area of communication share a common understanding. However we're going to interpret it and give reason of what it is that is important for this country. When the MDA was brought into life, because part of the analysis had actually uncovered that there was very little that we were doing as media people in general, people in advertising, people in communication, to promote new media. In fact, to be pretty honest, media diversification in this instance. So this agency was set up to do that. There's a national agenda issue again when it comes to us as practitioners of the profession. The fellow that may not like Mr. Mdimle, or the fellow that might think is ugly, is neither here nor there. What are the imperatives that is in my work? Is it true? He and I have certain imperatives that we have to address. And I think what we should put across is, the chairperson and member of the committee respectfully know that 3-4 presentations ago, it wasn't the greatest place to be at during a presentation when MDDA stood up and we were accused. It wasn't the right thing to be doing. Not only between us as signatories to the same charter, but because it wasn't helping us map a way forward. And I think what we've learned and what we want to encourage is our independence will never be compromised. ACA is not going to compromise its independence in the same way that GCIS has not compromised the independence, but I think if we're not matured and don't realize that cooperation is better on issues that affect us because the national agenda demands that we do them, then we will not be sitting here and doing this. And thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Dr. Ngoma. I'll come to you, Honorable Sir.
I've noted you. Aka, I'll come back to you, Honorable Chair. Aka, anything? I know that was NDDA, but there were certain issues which went across. But if there's nothing, will come probably later. It's fine.
I don't have anything else to add. I think all the questions have been answered quite accurately by both the NDDA and by our spokesperson on the ACA part. I think that it is imperative to state that collaboration across the different industry bodies is very necessary in the business of communication, because that collaboration demonstrates communication and the power of communication. And I think that it's equally important to state that whilst we regulate our space, communication is a very broad space, and it would be naive to look at advertising in the context of only content or only media or only regulation, for example. I think that our cooperation over the years with the different industry stakeholders has strengthened us individually as individual organizations, but I think broadly speaking, in terms of transformation, if one looks to where we started in 2002 to where we are today in 2012, I think there's been tremendous progress, and that progress is only attributable to the cooperation and collaboration across the different sectors within communication. And I think that, as was previously stated, the ACA certainly values the relationships that it has created over the years. And I think that we will continue to work within our own context, but also across the different sectors of advertising and communications to strengthen not only the business of advertising and communications, but also transformation and our agenda to ensure that transformation is achieved within the different sectors within communication.
Tatum Tinde, there are members in a queue, and T is also here. It might get cold, but just...
Thanks, and it's just the last point that was raised. We have circulated the MEC charter to the members.
These members, you see, are e-members. So they are asking you to email. So they are e-members. They see they had copy, but because they are e-members, you must understand them in that context. So they want you to email it too. I don't know how they want Google it, but email it. Honorable Kinlan, Honorable Sheen, then I'll close with the Honorable O. Trochen, and then Dabe.
Thank you. Thank you,
Chairperson.
Chairperson, I must say the issue of the media brokers is a matter of grave concern. If what has happened, that money was taken and from those commercial companies, you know, the small print and electronic media, and it was not placed and the advertisements were not placed, that is clearly a case of fraud. I would like to know what steps have the NDDA taken to report this, and if not, why not? Because as an agency of government, certainly it must lead the way to eradicate any form of corruption, and that would constitute a corrupt practice. That would actually make the NDDA guilty of transgressing the act if you are not reporting those instances, because I do believe that is very important. You are being functioned and supported by public money, and therefore every one of us must, at the slightest whim of monies disappearing into pockets of people who shouldn't get it, should report it to the necessary law enforcement agencies, and cases must be opened. So I would like to know what steps have been taken. If not, why not?
Thank you. Yes, so the media broker discussion really raised eyebrows for me. Obviously, what you're saying is, or you're implying, that the media broker industry is rife with fraudulent activities. And then one wonders, if that is so, why you haven't laid charges. And because this is taxpayers' money that's, you are saying, has gone into pockets for which it was not intended. And one would like to know what action you're going to take, and if you have already laid charges against these people. Then the other one was going, I wanted to just follow up on your very clear undertaking that the community newspapers were to empower diversity of views and opinions and society discourse in the community areas. Now, obviously, one would then like to know if these community newspapers publish views and discussions that are critical of government, delivery of state employee action, whether their revenue from government will be threatened if they do not support the positive spin that government wants to put on things, and if they do give expression or space to opposing views, whether their financial viability will be threatened. Thank you.
Thank you. Dear?
Thank you, Shepherdson. I just have a few questions that have been raised by my constituents from Facebook.
Joking.
All right. They raised the fact that AAA is not accessible to young people by virtue of AAA. Oh, what did I say? Oh, sorry. Okay. AAA by the school, yes. As this is a private institution, they're saying it is not accessible. I don't know why. Maybe you know the challenges that are faced there to many young South Africans. And then they then ask again, what is the plan to get the course in public institutions so that they can all have access to it? On the media brokers issue, they're saying due to the PFMA that governs our procurement system, it has stringent processes, for example, tax clearance certificate. Have you guys taken this into account? What is the plan? Because that might be what leads to people having these brokers and not having access to government, whatever, programs and all that. Thanks. Try.
So you represent a Facebook constituent, also representing Twitter. Okay, no, it's fine. But also the hands. Look, probably Honorable Sheen and Stein, they've just joined the committee. I'm sure some of you are aware they've not been here. Probably that's why Honorable Sheen, in her opening statement, she indicated that she might ask things which already we went through them and so on. But I appreciate your response because you were able to go back and give us the background and so on. But I must say that some of those committee meetings, they don't want you to put me in trouble. I was not there either. I don't want this member to try me and say, why did you change them? I was not there either. So I'm continuing with the process, we started some time ago. But I must say, overarching is that it is this committee which instructed yourself to go and work together and so that you can come out with results which are going to take us forward and transform this sector. It's us. So you're working together. Part of that national agenda is what we have requested you to do. That go and sit down in one room, lock the room, throw away the key until you find the solution, then you come here and tell us how to take forward the country and so on in terms of transforming this industry and so on. So I'm just raising that as a background in terms of your coming back and reporting and so on. But I must say that, you see, this issue of the media brokers, probably respond on what the members are saying, but where do you find them? Because you see, I remind members who are there, when we went to Free State, most of the community media in Free State, they were complaining with the middleman. I wrote that the media broker. They said it's the middleman. When they're supposed to get 5,000, they finally get 1,500, 1,000 and something, the entire money goes to that middleman. Still remember, when we went to Free State in Northern Cape, the matter came up about this middleman, but I didn't know that it's a media broker. I only know that they are labor brokers only. But now I see what it means. So they've just been coming out throughout the provinces. And that's the reason that that is an issue. Probably we must be thankful that you followed up and tried to get of that. But I must say to members, I think the entity which you are talking about, which reports to this committee, is SAPO, South African Post Office, which has a campaign of around 5 million or so, if I'm not mistaken, was around 5 million, which was supposed to be run by the community media, and this thing you're talking about happened, and so on. But I'm just reading that so that members also flag that probably SAPO has to do its part in terms of accounting to the committee, how did they actually spend that money, in terms of taking also their responsibility to make sure that money was well spent, and so on. So it's a matter which members must flag, so that when SAPO comes, we are able also to engage them and so on. But I'm not preempting what members are raising in terms of your own responsibility around this particular matter and so on, what have you done and the other things and so on. The other issue is the issue of the government commitment, because we must clarify this thing. It is not government who said they want a certain percent commitment to community media. The issue with DCIS was that there is a cabinet resolution or decision that the government must centralize its advertising and so on, budgets and related issues and so on. It is this committee which said to DCIS last year when they were coming to present, we want government commitment in terms of percentage, how much of the expense of government will go to community media. So we have separated the people that they don't find themselves in a difficult position. It's us as a committee. We said we cannot establish community media as a government policy, and then government turn its back on those community media and choose to go and advertise only on the mainstream media and so on. Government has the responsibility to also to advertise. And that's the final thing, because as things sometimes comes out, it is symbolic. It is GGIS who's saying we want to push it. But I'm just saying those are the issues of the community raised with GGIS. And we are still waiting for that matter. What's the name we are coming to present the strategic plan? We're still waiting that commitment in terms of government percentage of their expense. How much will go to committee? We have not yet got that commitment from GCIS. It's an ongoing discussion. But it's us as a committee who want that. And we're not going to be apologetic around that. We want it. We want the government to utilize this community media as its own creator. So we can't, the government can't turn it back and use them and so on. So we have to identify those issues so that they are clear over them, that GCIS, whatever they are doing, they are responding to what the committee said. And so on. That's why I just wanted to clarify this issue so that as we move forward, at least we move together and so on. But you can respond to your thing.
Thanks, Chair. From our part, we are creating an enabling environment for when that percentage commitment is realized, that the systems make it easy for accounting for that, and that's why that project, the online booking system. So we support the call that was made by the committee, and we want to make sure that the sector is ready to be able to receive and account for such ad spends once it is clearly channeled through them. The question of media broker in terms of steps and actions we took, I think it's Honorable Shin and Honorable Killian. From as far back as 2006-07, that's when we asked these middlemen and women or brokers to give us the information in terms of how much has been spent through them for the sector so that we're able to report on that. And if you check our 2006-07 annual report, we had about three or four of them, and subsequently every year we'd get one or two of them, and others are beginning to not give us that information. We suspect it's because then the industry begins to question that information, and those therefore who may be guilty in terms of that information are the ones who tend to not give us then their subsequent years figures. but we continue to encourage and ask them to give us that information because it will help us to be sure that so much has been invested into the sector over and above the MDDA investment and therefore supporting the viability of this very important medium of communication. The cases that we have been able to follow up, i.e. the SAPO case that the chair is referring to, is the steps that you are taking to get the information and be sure of the information before we could take the matter forward. And given that you then have to, after receiving the information from the different entities, you have to check with the different stations, and as you know, we've got more than 100 community radio stations. You have to check with them whether they have indeed run such a campaign. And at this stage, also because the electronic system is not as, there isn't an electronic system to account, you can't press a button and get proof, which is why the online booking system will help us, because you can then, with that system, you can press a button and get proof that such campaign was indeed played. Even ICASA will be able to get records from that system that will reflect on the programming that were played by a particular radio station. So those are the steps we're taking towards that. The final accusation or allegation or steps in respect of fraud and corruption will come at the late stage once we have facts. At this stage, we are still gathering information and making sure that we've got the correct facts. And therefore, it's still early to come to that conclusion. Another question, the question of our support and government support to community media is without strings attached. We have supported this sector from since its beginning, and our act, there's a section in our act, I'm not sure whether it's section 3, that ensures that we do not interfere with content and editorial of such media. So indeed we do not. And hence, if you screen them, if you look at the list of all the projects that we support, you can see that there's a diversity. There's the different projects by different communities. And if you were to then go further and monitor their content, I am sure you will see that there is diverse views and opinions through those media. I mean, if you go to our Facebook page, the MDDA Facebook page, we put there the what do you call that, front page of the newspaper? The front page, a cover page of the different newspapers. And if you look at them, you can see they are so critical, some of them, because they are editorial, and we have no say in terms of what their editorial is and their views and opinions. But the key is you have to support these so that there is diverse views and opinions. Those communities are able to enter the space, enter this information space, and share their views, but also appreciate the work that is being done in their communities, inform their communities about the work that is being done, educate their communities, and so forth. And I think all those are being achieved, all those intended and noble objectives are being achieved as this democracy requires. So therefore, in the nutshell, there is no threat against any of those who may have different views to therefore not get funding. The criteria to get funding is publicly published in our system, and none of that criteria refers to that you must be a praise Singapore government. That does not exist in our criteria for funding any of these projects.
Mr. Manny will speak on behalf of government.
Yes, I am referring to the government government funding that we handle, and I'm sure the same principle applies because I've never heard of any of such interference from government. The question that comes from the Facebook constituency, indeed the question of tax clearance certificate is a difficult question, but it's a right thing to do. It's like paying an SABC license. It's the right thing to do. So we therefore encourage and strictly actually do not transfer funds until one is a good citizen and has done the right thing. So, yes, those who are struggling to get those may not access the funds, but what we then do is to help them. We do convene some workshops, we bring SARS, and we engage SARS. We ask them to simplify their requirements so that everyone is able to comply. Because in some cases, we have realized that it's a demystification of the requirements that lead to them not being able to comply. So once they are simplified, we've seen a number of our projects after application, once we've taken them through those processes, they then get the certificate and they access funding. So I think it's a commitment that all South Africans should commit to do the right thing and be good tax-paying citizens, clear their certificates, also pay their SABC licenses. Finally, I think the question of
You might have a complaint about an advert in a portfolio committee meeting. About SABC paying the license. I don't know how I'm going to handle that because it's part of the discussion.
The question of accessing the courses, I'll ask if maybe that Nkomo can answer that one. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much. The AAA school of the advertising schools that we have or institution is the largest of all the private ones, which would be Red and Yellow, Vega, and all others. I think we sit at about over 400 students for this year, and about 38% of those we are able to say are actually black. Now, the course, ma'am, that we're talking about is only for the pilot purposes that we're taking it to the AAA school, because somebody has got to take the responsibility of making sure that it can work. And once it has been piloted, we have reported to this committee that it will then go to all institutions like Vega, Red and Yellow, and all the others. We'll only do it only as a pilot, and after that it will be open to all institutions to be able to implement. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I think there are two issues on this follow-up question. One, this issue of tax clearance certificate is about these major brokers, men and women. The issue, I think the question was, before even SAPO gave them report, did SAPO check whether they do have tax clearance certificate? Because we seem to be sometimes giving people certain things and only realize later when you're supposed to pay them that actually they don't have the tax clearance certificate instead of verifying first. So I think you might not have maybe the idea, but the question was also linked to those media brokers. Whether those media brokers themselves, do they have the tax clearance certificate on what they are doing, or they're just fly by nuts, people who are doing those things and so on, and take advantage of the situation and so on. I'm not sure whether we'll be able to answer that. But that was part of the question. The second one about the AAA school is that I think it's an issue of awareness about the existence of the school and so on to those disadvantaged communities. Whether do you have programs towards that and so on, so that, because I think the Facebook community is talking about accessibility and knowing about the school itself, that it does exist and so on. So along those lines, Tatunko, I'm not sure whether you've got anything to say.
So I think SAPO could verify whether the middleman did have the tax clearance certificate. whether the middle man or woman does require the debt clearance certificate for them to transfer the money to the station, again, we can check that through their system. But I don't think the stations and the newspapers wanted the middleman to avoid the tax clearance certificate. I don't think that is the case, because that advertising income is just but one income. They also do need the income from, like us, directly, and it requires those tax clearance certificates. Some of the ones who said they did not participate in those campaigns actually do have the tax clearance certificate. So it should. I don't think it is the reason they do not access the money for those campaigns. It's the matter that we're probing in terms of why those campaigns. I mean, in this, there's this one particular case where a report was actually reported to the client that said this is the campaign, it was ran through this time, etc., etc. And that report was, the station did not issue that report. So clearly it means the middle man created a report that they reported. So it's those cases that we are probing, and once we have established the facts and information around that, we will indeed work with the relevant organs of state to take the process forward.
Yes, yeah, thank you, Chair. Accessibility in terms of getting to the school and knowing the school, I think being the largest, we should have a better profile in terms of advertising private institution. But again, as a school, we have gone into a system now where, unlike before, when we went out, we used to go to universities and colleges, where we're now actually going out to high schools in terms of the reach. And I think in general, say, without being specific to the AAA school, is that now we have universities offering advertising courses as well. And it tends to be that universities, some of them are a lot more cheaper because they are funded by state and they're not as private as a AAA school is, but the total package would be that we will need to do more, not only to make people be aware which we think they are, which is why we have most students than the other institutions, but I think we also need to make sure that the transformation process within the AAA school is just as well known. Because the truth of the matter, I just said that we're sitting with 38 people or students are back. The truth of the matter is, those of us who knew the AAA school 10 years ago would think that it is still exactly what it was then, 5% black. So maybe it's a challenge to us to make sure that we take this information and take it to the public, and we appreciate that. Thank you.
Yes, Chair, one of the questions or the answers I'm not too happy with. And it relates to the question by my colleagues about the middlemen, brokers, call it what you wish. A statement was made that there are middlemen, media brokers, that have taken money and have not followed through in terms of placing the advert or whatever it was. That was a statement. It wasn't an allegation. The question then was, what has been done about these middlemen? The answer has been that almost like we suspect it's taking place and we will look into it and when we find the evidence. Now, this is a public meeting. Like I indicate here, it was a statement that there are people that are doing this. And the question was very directly, what has MDDA been doing about the ones that they are aware of? Now, we need to clarify. Do we know of such people? Do we think people are doing it? And if we do know of such people and we do have the evidence, then what has been done about it? Thank you.
Can you wait for what that will break for him? And then you come in so that the tea is not... But you can come in if there is something first.
No, I think it's linked to the issue on the media broadcast, that the way it's coming through, it's a matter that needs further probing the matter that it's now, you know, known to us that this is happening, that middlemen or middlewomen that have been very active in that particular environment, due to factors, obviously, of distances where services are, and because, as we said, and make an example of Mileji community radio stations, if people not have capacity to access certain points, then they then rely on these particular people from time to time. And it may not be money coming from MDDA alone, it will be various actors, RAN South Africa, GCIS, even private companies that will then be putting adverts all over. And I don't see MDDA having a capacity really then to even probe SAB, Ruaris, or any other person that might be putting adverts there. But it's something that is glaring and that needs to be looked at. And whether the online application will then assist to then cut out the middleman. And if so, when is that element going to be coming in? And indeed, will then provide a solution that will cut the middleman. Once the cases that are known are investigated, but the unknown cases are so plenty and that and we don't even capacity to even probe on those unknown cases. But will the online be helping us as government, on government public money, and on private sector? I'm not sure whether the online will also take that on board, so that the community newspaper and the community radio will then get what is there and indeed and benefit from this particular process. But I'm glad that it came out as incidences that have happened, and they may not have evidence to take it to a level of criminal case as yet. But I think what the committee impression is, we need to act on that particular issue and we speed on those known cases and see if they cannot be elevated to that particular point of open criminal charges against those particular people on monies known and monies coming from government or on cases known. But there may be a lot of them that are there and we do not know much about, and whether the online application will really indeed arrest the situation, cut the middleman, because brokering is just going to deny this community media to really get the benefit of advertising in itself.
You must note, I can see, can we break out, start with Honorable Killen and Shin as we come back? Just for, because we need to discuss and finalize it. My worry is that as I keep on taking your hands, one might not reach the conclusion on the matter and so on. Just let's break for tea probably and come back again at past 11, and then we continue, then we finalize, we go to the other two presentations. Thank you. Before we lose some members because of other commitments. But before I start with Honorable Killen, she was the next, and Honorable Shin to follow. We just want to welcome the members from the Treasure magazine. I'm told they are here. They are here. You are most welcome. Fortunately, today we are discussing the issues which are close to your heart in terms of your day-to-day work, which you are doing and so on. You are most welcome. Honorable Killen.
Chair, to come back to the issue of capacity again. I want to know, it seems that there is a tension between the role of so-called media brokers, which is a very necessary advertising tool. It could be, if it's properly managed, etc. People who want to reach specific communities don't all know when you can maximize your advertisement spend. Certain times of specific media, such as SABC's prime time, and obviously you pay more then, et cetera. So it's quite complex. Media management, media planning is very complex. So there is most definitely a role for that. So I have a concern, and I want to put it on the table, that is there a sort of a resistance against allowing a commercial sector, such as media brokering,
or is it simply to say that we must make sure that people don't lose money in the process, especially these young and upcoming community bases, etc.? So I want to have a very categoric answer on that. And the second issue is, does the NDDA believe that the online platform will be able to do all of that media planning on behalf of these community stations, etc.? Can it replace the role? Or should one rather look at identifying which are those rotten eggs in the basket and make sure that action be taken against them, but allow the industry, because in the end, it's all of our benefit if people can all eke out a living, so that we don't compete as government and government agencies with them. I don't think that would be appropriate for government to try to fulfill that role exclusively, because my concern is coming back to capacity. And just in conclusion, as far as capacity is concerned, because, you know, online capacity, do you have that? Is it going to work? But then also capacity to investigate possible fraudulent activities. Does the NDDA have the capacity to investigate that? If not, why don't you just hand it over to the law enforcement agencies and say, money was lost in these processes, please investigate and charge people accordingly. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Much of my concerns have been expressed by my colleague here. But I would like to add that I think that the media brokering sector of the advertising industry is a highly specialized. And as far as I'm aware from my many years in the media industry, is highly specialized and highly credible and very valuable. And I think that the NDDA has done this sector a grave disservice by coming to a public meeting and blanketing the whole industry with accusations of fraudulent activity, and I think that perhaps an apology is due, because you have no facts to back this up with, and you say you don't have the capacity to investigate it, but you're quite prepared to smear them, which I think is unacceptable. And also, you know, one thinks that part of the problem is that these community media, newspapers and radio stations, do not have the management capacity to actually really manage their ad turnover, their revenues, what their bookings really effectively. How do you know they didn't place that advert? How do you know that the money hasn't gone to the community newspapers and media? And I think that there needs to be a very thorough investigation now into the financial management of all the people you do place adverts with, to actually check that whether or not they receive this. And also, is there in place a media monitoring system so that you can actually know independently whether what you've paid for has actually been aired or published? Because you've now opened, I think, quite a serious topic that needs thorough investigation on your part. Because, I mean, Honourable Papeda said earlier that this isn't only government money that's perhaps been misspent by these media brokers, but also private sector money. And I would tend to think that if private sector adverts had not been placed in any of these community newspapers by media brokers, they would be jumping up and down and screaming, and they would have laid charges already. So I don't believe that this is a widespread practice, and I think that there might be some repercussions. Thank you.
Any other member before I hand over for responses? None. MDA?
Thanks, Chair. Honourable members, I have not heard anyone of us saying the whole industry, none of that came from us. Yes, we're speaking to, can I, through you, Jefferson?
No. The member understands that one person speak at a time.
Yes, we referred to a specific practice that, by the way, did not come from MDDA. It is through the oversight visit where this committee heard from the the community media, the small commercial media, a complaint saying that there is this practice. That's where it starts. It doesn't start from here. So what we then did was to follow it up after those oversight visits, and it is through that following up where then we did receive indeed some information that there were, like, for example, the SAPO campaign that was referred to earlier. So this is a specific matter, and when we spoke of the brokers, we even said that, and I even referred you to the 2006-07 annual report, wherein you can see those who provided information and then decreasingly seeing few providing information. And we're talking about those middlemen or women who are servicing this community radio sector specifically. And that's the case in point that we're talking to. And indeed, Honorable Killian, we don't have that capacity to investigate matters like this. And I think the Deputy Minister was spot on in that regard. The only situation we're dealing with is, in pursuit of our mandate, we encourage and create an enabling environment. And it is through that then we have this experience that some of our projects have experienced. And we followed it up to check where is the problem. And we found some cases that relate to the problem. And we are processing it through the right channels, wherein, of course, then the right processes will pursue the matter and come to the determination that that whether it is a fraud or corruption, etc. On our side, we're not yet there. We can't make that determination. We have established information in terms of some practice and its implication, and investigated facts around those cases that we know, and we will submit that information through the right channels for further processing. The question of whether there is resistance to allowing such business to take place, the answer there is no, there isn't such. And I think, again, the point, and I'm not sure whether you were in some of the oversight visits where the case was raised by the people affected by this, and some members who may have attended even the annual general meetings of the National Community Radio Forum, where these cases were raised based on the practices that people have had, and in some of the annual general meetings that some of these projects have, where they then indicate that according to the report that is published, Agent X says they've transferred money Z to our station, and none of that is seen in our books, and therefore there is a problem. So it is there where the problem has arisen, and none of them or us is saying there shouldn't be media brokers per se, but just that the practice should be professionalized, and the online booking system is intended to assist professionalize that. Its abilities, where they start and end, we have, as we construct the business case, we are dealing with that. So it should be clear once that is final, whether once that system is in place, there will be a role, and what role will be for those middlemen and women. And I think at that stage we'll be able to determine that role. And so the answer in the nutshell is that no, there isn't such resistance, but we're dealing here with cases in point that we are following up, as you were saying earlier, that if we were to fold our arms after hearing that, it may not be in the best interest of this country, or even the mandate as enshrined in the MDD Act. I think that covers all the questions, Shepherdson.
No. Thanks, MDDA, for the responses and the other responses we had from the other organizations. Probably we need to indicate that all this thing we're talking about is this thing of what we call the oversight work of the committee. When we embark on oversight, it's where people who are affected by this thing raise these issues. So we're not dumbfucking it or making it up. You see, probably, that's where the problem is. Because of the nature of the industry itself, the way it's so loose, is that those you call highly professionalized might be those who service the those on top, the highest, and neglect the lower one. That's the problem. That's where the problem is. And this highlights the problem that those professional, highly skilled ones, they don't care about the lower end, they only care about where they are making money. Maximize money and so on. As a result, then you've got this lower problem and so on. Because what MDDA is talking about, is talking about that community media level. We're not talking about the mainstream media and so on. We're talking about the community media where the mandate is in the main and where the, when we do oversight to get those particular matters. So, and these things which we say to them they must do is out of that process where we can't do it as a committee because they are the agencies of government to do those things and so on. But I think the issue which you have raised about the issue of media brokerage and so on, I think you still need to do more work. But in this instance, because SAPO is accounting to this committee and we also appropriate budget for them, they have to be able to account to us about the utilization of that money, which means there should be that interaction between yourself, MDDA, and SAPO in terms of bringing this matter to finality, because we really want to know what happened to the 5 million allocated by SAPO for this advertising at that particular level. But I agree with DM, the Deputy Minister, that it is not only your issue. Actually, people need to be worried about SAPO. Because this money coming from their budget to say this must happen. If we have discovered some irregularities from inside, probably SAPO are the best place in terms of accounting, in terms of the CFMA, in terms of how does that money been spent and so on. So it's a matter of probably people must continue investigating and come out with a clear report what happened, and steps to be taken should be SAPO more than yourself as MDDA. If you raise the matter and discover the matter, I think SAPO, they have to take it up. It's unfortunate because they are not here, but you must find a way of interacting with SAPO so that they are coming back, moving forward, as Honorable Shin and Killen and Stein raise the matter. How do you take it forward? How do you account it in terms of PFMA and so on? So SAPO has to deal with that particular matter and so on, moving forward and so on. But I think all these things they are raising, it reflects how the sector is not integrated as it is. You've got the high-flying, highly professional and so on somewhere there, but as you go down, it was something else. So those are the things. But I must say probably if the language of accusing them immediately has been utilized, probably the best one would be that the alleged corrupt activities around that particular sector and so on. Because we don't have time now to go to follow the hindsight and so on. If that has been used, it will mean the substitution of that, which will say those alleged practices and so on, until the other investigating processes have been used and so on, so that we don't make a definite statement. We know that it's definite for us as a committee when we do oversight, they tell us so. That is definite. During the oversight, they tell us so that we are being robbed. By these people and so on, as this community media and so on. But we hope that we'll find a way of interacting with SAPO. We're going to raise the issue with SAPO ourselves, probably before they even come here so that they interact with you and they take the process forward. We can burden you with that responsibility. Whereas SAPO is their money, which they spend in terms of to do this advert and so on. I think if it, probably we can stop there about this issue of the SAPO issue. We'll pick it up as we are moving forward and so on. There was the ASA presentation in terms of the cases and so on. And then Honorable Stein and Drogen, at one point they wanted to ask questions. And the last presentation, Honorable Stein.
Okay, thank you. Just a quick question on the...
on the complaints, etc. I don't know, fortunately or unfortunately, I'm a bit of a mathematician, and if there's an error in figures, then it jumps out at me. Just looking at the stats, okay, I'm just wondering, when I look at the cases that's been investigated, rejected, etc., both for consumers and the competitors, it doesn't add up to the total number of cases that's been reported. So somewhere along the line, something has fallen between the cracks. But similarly, if you look at the cases upheld, let's take the consumers, for example, the cases upheld and the cases dismissed, and even the resolved ones, doesn't add up to the number that's been investigated. So from that point of view, it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Thank you. Trojan?
Thanks, Jay. Same, the question on the same picture as well. On same slide, sorry. You say there's an increase in the number of complaints. If you are saying that, and there's a big number that's been rejected, about 1,508. So that doesn't justify the increase, and it has been dismissed. So why? Can you give an explanation there? What kind of cases are you looking at that have been rejected? There's no summary of the kind of cases that you are looking at, reviewing, and so forth. You're speaking about investigated 676 and then rejected again 199. Why has it been rejected? What are the cases that you are looking at that justifies this rejection? Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I'll start with the last question. In terms of when you say rejected, it could be because of jurisdiction. It could be because there's no validity to the complaint. For example, we need that there are certain sections in our code that indicate what you can complain about. It could be misrepresentation. It could be discrimination. It could be unsafe to children. So we have different categories. So that's what we would adjudicate upon. And initially, when we get particularly the consumer complaints, we have an assessment to look at, does it fall within our code and does it fall within our jurisdiction? We would then reject it if it does not fall in, and we would notify the people why it has been rejected and we can't investigate the claim. So those are the kind of issues. Unfortunately, I mean, this is just an overview. We haven't done all the stats. We usually would have that in our annual report where you would get a breakdown in terms of the media, which media they come from, and in terms of what the complaints are about. So was it about misrepresentation? Was it about prejudicial? Was it in terms of the competitor? Was it imitation, etc.? So we would have those once we have our annual report, and our annual report generally comes out around June, and we'll then distribute that with what you call the figures. When we say there's an increase, if you look at that, we say valid. So basically, we usually get within a year between 2,000 and 3,000 complaints, and the valid would mean that it's the ones that we went on to investigate, not falling within the rejected. So when we say there's an increase in the valid, it could still be within the 2,000, 3,000, but meaning that there was basis for complaint. In terms of the numbers, I would have to look at that, but sometimes it's because we categorize some twice. For example, when a claim comes in, we would put it as consumer, and at times a competitor would then also complain about it, but also sometimes it's also the medium that we look at. But I haven't looked at those, I haven't added those up, and I would look into that and then give you further statistics if the committee allows me at a later stage. Thank you, Chair. I didn't have my hand up, but you could read between lines that I can't call myself a mathematician, but I did mathematics.
I really think the previous speaker is quite correct. The slide is not assisting us. In actual fact, he is correct. The figures there. What Asa is trying to explain, I think it should be in a way that people can be able to read against that total that is above there. I don't know how can they do it, but I think this slide is not assisting us.
Honorable Bapela, Honorable Bapela, I know that you have to leave at 12. When your time comes, we are honored that we've been here, so you can do that when the time comes. Thank you very much. Don't disrupt my meeting. Honorable Davin.
I person just to add on what Honorable Story has said. I think just to advise the team that is presenting the ASA, probably in the near future it will be better when they make the documentation for Parliament, because it's meant for the public, to first submit the actual document before the PowerPoint, because those are your speaking notes. Therefore, if you give the document so that when members go through your presentation, they have the understanding of what is it that is happening. Because really, if one were to take that document to his or her constituency, it's nothing. I even commented to DM next to me, Ogote, there's no report must here. They're just browsing. They are going to submit a report sometime. So maybe in the future, it will be advantageous if you do that for your sake and for the public's interest. Thanks, sir.
Thank you. You don't have to respond in anything. Brochen is still coming. Honorable Brochen.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. This is a follow-up. I do understand what's been explained. Maybe you do follow your jurisdiction and the different codes, but if it's not in your jurisdiction and the complaint itself is a valid complaint, but then it goes to the wrong place, do you advise then the complainant to go then to the right place? Do you then refer that complaint to the right place? Do you give that kind of assistance?
Before you respond to this one, can you help me? Just in short, but if you can respond later in detail. I take it that what the members have raised, you are going to incorporate with what you are saying. That probably when we agree now, before we close that, when are you going to come back? We hope at that time your report will be out, we can be able to get more detailed report and so on around those matters. But I wanted to understand in relation to the issue of content. Yesterday there was a very interesting presentation where if you are watching a drama, I don't know what they call it, your generation and this other one, copies. And then in the line there, someone advertised something wrongly. But you see, it's a copy. Then the person is talking about a product in a soapy line. Now, how is it going to be the difficulty of not interfering with content that are being advertising? I heard a very interesting presentation yesterday, but I don't know that because it might be a very thin line, because it's a line in a soapy, which might be now the content of that soapy, not an advertisement separately, but which is giving a wrong information probably to the public. How does it work there? Probably can respond that with the other question.
Thank you, Chair. With regards to complaints that are not within our jurisdiction, I believe we indicated during our June presentation to this committee that normally we would refer them
to the right body that deals with it. So we do refer matters that are not within our jurisdiction to the right bodies to be handled. With regards to the one that the chair has raised, which is placement, it is actually covered under ICASA, around content. We have been in discussions about 2 years ago where ICASA was investigating whether we could look at that. Eventually, they decided that it still falls within their mandate and they would look at it. So we call it placement. However, if somebody does complain to our body around such an issue, there would be a decision where we would have to look at, does it fall under advert or is it not an advertisement? And if we feel that it's an ad, we would then, deal with it. For example, we've had a case last year which we've subsequently been taken to the High Court on, where it was about a 30-minute, would say, program. And there was major debate on whether that was actually an ad or was it information. We ruled as the directorate that it was not an ad, but was subsequently overruled by one of our appeal committees when they looked at what was the content of that particular piece, the 30-minute information piece, and they held that it was an ad and ruled accordingly. So it would depend whether it's brought to us. But on the main, it is covered under ICASA rules of licensing to the broadcasters. Thank you. I don't know if the chair wants to have something.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I think from this discussion, we should make an offer to do a presentation, a full presentation, on the Advertising Standards Authority, because I think it will benefit members, because what we're doing today is, having been here a number of times, we thought we should be given some information, but it could well be that we should go into why we have the ASA and why it's been recognized by government and what it actually does, and then hopefully get all the maths sorted out. I'm not a mathematician, but I'm sure we have enough mathematicians who can do that. So we'll offer to do a presentation at an appropriate time on the ASA as a whole. Thank you.
I want to learn about an advert and a placement and all those other things. To me, it's confusing. And so, but thanks very much. I'm sure it's something which we'll have to follow up so that we understand. And we clear this thing of jurisdiction, because I think it's at the best interest of the committee to understand what falls where and so on, so that we are not confused in terms of when these things happen and so on. The representation, which was done by ASCA. Was the light limit? Okay, see everyone waiting for presentation. No question time for the last presentation. Or are you saying?
Chair, thank you. I mean, the question that sort of just glares out at that presentation is really just, we're talking about communication entities. And we've got an entity here that missed the workshop due to confusion with dates. I mean, it's just a glaring question in this three-page presentation that I can't help but ask. You know, how does that happen?
You see, I might assume how did it happen. You see, when Mr. Nkomo was presenting, he said on the 17th, but it's written 7. That might be the first of the
3rd. It's a simple thing. The notice came in and said 2012, and we only discovered it was not committed in 2012. So when it came, it said 2012. Instead of 2011. That's all that happened.
It's a mathematical issue. Okay, another thing.
Chair, I suppose that's why it's drawn my attention. But surely, if you're in December 2011 and you get an invitation for a year later, you're bound to ask, you know, if it's actually next year's December. So nobody asked any questions about whether it's 2011 or 2012.
Any other question? Does it come to want to respond? It's a mathematical issue. Okay, no, it's fine. Hopefully next time they were in a hurry to 2012, whilst we're in 2011, for the good things in 2012 and so on. But any other question, members, before we finalize all the presentation? Nothing. Let me take this opportunity to thank MDDA. I was tempted to say GCIS. MDDA, so I'm told there is no GCIS here, and it's only MDDA. But I must take this opportunity probably to give it to the leader of the delegation.
Thanks, Chairperson. From our side, really, just to thank the committee, honourable members, and the DM. But also just to say that, really, and just to assure the committee and members of the public, including the Facebook, Twitter, and new media delegations, which I ascribe to, that really, as board, we really engage with, we are quite rigorous in our assessment of projects that come before us. And oftentimes we debate at length matters of sustainability in the sector as well as professionalism. I think many of us have either worked with or and in the community media, so we are aware of some of the challenges. So just to assure you of that, and also just to say that the NDDA itself, we convene compliance workshops that really seek to professionalize the sector as well and seek to assist with the reporting of from the sector, not just our grantees, but really just to improve professionalism in the sector as a whole. So just to say that is an initiative that is there, and we've noted improvements with respect to reporting. And then lastly, just to say, obviously for us, the matter that has really been flagged today around media brokers, of course it's an important issue. I think the allegations that have come to the fore, of course, something that we take seriously, and we will endeavour to ensure that that the MDDA is in a position to respond accordingly on our next appearance before you. So, thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, all members of the committee and the Deputy Minister in Ascension and the rest of friends. I almost said followers because there aren't any followers here. We believe that we're making progress, and I think this session, again, more than the last one, is a demonstration of the efficacy of working as a team. And we hope that the inspiration from this committee will continue to make sure that by mid-2012, we shall have achieved a lot more with your encouragement. Thank you very much, sir.
Aka was the last,
I'd like to say thank you to the Portfolio Committee and to all the honourable guests. We absolutely look forward to the engagement with yourself, and we feel that over the last 2-3 times that we've come here, we've been productive, we've addressed a lot of issues, and we look forward to the next meeting.
Thank you very much. We are noting the progress and the issue raising by the members in terms of the timeline and the other things. You see, someone was saying you need more time to implement what you are busy doing now. So we'll give you that time to implement whatever you are busy with, but you must come and report. So when Mr. Nkomo was saying mid-2012, it was given that you should be here July or August, because that would be post-mid. So July, August, around there. You should be able to come back and give us precisely what has happened on all these issues which we have agreed upon, which we have been doing and so on. I think that would be sufficient, Mr. Ntimd, in terms of the space and time to implement what we agreed upon and so on. I hope at that time the charter will have been moved to from 12 to 9. It's 9 to 12 or 12 to 9? 12 to 9.
Come again? Confuse them? Oh, okay, okay. Whatever way, but let's say around July, August, we should be able to come back and give us progress in terms of what is happening. But you must also understand that we will be taking the media, the print media, in Durban second phase. We have not finalized the date. I'm raising that because these issues are sometimes, some of them, they talk to each other. Probably you will be part of those discussions. We have not determined dates around that and so on. But that second part of print media transformation will be coming up and so on. We urge them to have a charter like you. So when you meet them in your meetings, you must tell them that it's cool to have a charter. There's no problem about having a charter. Nothing finished around that. It's a good thing to do, like SABC saying, oh, paying the license and so on. So I hope that they will meet then at that particular time when you have done some other work and so on. Thank you very much, Babe Manyi, to come in your capacity as a board member and new board member, Babu Penny, to come and honor us with your presence and so on, and everyone else who's here at the end for your time and also to carry the mandate for Facebook family. Thank you very much to be here, and everyone else, Honorable Sim, correct? I know that it was, we were in a dark city. It's fine. There will be light at the end of the tunnel when we miss second round. Thank you very much. We are done for today, for this matter, not for today. But I just want to say for members, there are minutes for the previous meeting. Next week when we meet, we'll deal with that previous minutes and this minutes, the minutes for this meeting. So we don't want to file the minutes. So you'll get the circulation of today's meeting minutes tomorrow afternoon. So you must read them with the last week minutes. So next week when we meet, we adopt the two, and then we proceed, we move forward and so on. That is one issue. We have received a letter from Honorable Shin with a request that probably we must call upon the Minister of Communications and SAPO board or SAPO management, whatever, to come and appear before the committee to account about what appeared to be a sorry state of affairs in SAPO. There seems to be a lot of things which are happening which they don't seem to be accounted for. We've received the letter. We respond. We thought that probably we can do that when they come for their strategic plan at SAPO and so on. We have not finalized dates about that. We hope that we can be able to accommodate there. If we can't, probably we might have to find an opportunity to deal with that particular matter and so on. But I'm just raising it for the committee so that I'm sure we've responded to your letter already in terms of noting the receipt and so on. But we'll be trying to process it and so on the issues which we have raised. And we'll avail the letter to the other members of the committee so that they understand the issues which we are raising, which are seek to talk to the SAPO state of affairs, the missing of the billion, of the millions and the other things, and the continuing problems which they seem to be coming on day to day in relation to the South African Post Office and so on. But the letter will circulate it to the members. Honorable Mruto.
Thank you, Chairman. I just wanted to indicate to you that the last issue that you are dealing with might be a matter that will arise in your next minute. Because to me, I think I have a serious concern about what is the content of the letter that you are talking about. I promise you I'll be raising questions as a matter that will be arising from these minutes of today. I think some of the things are being really exaggerated. Thanks, Chairman.
Thank you. I'll give the letter to members. Let us not conclude on the issue of the letter. Let's say in the next meeting, after members have they look into the content of the letter. Anyway, the letter is with you already, I'm told. It's with you already.
But let's discuss it in the next meeting so that they were able to take a final decision in terms of how do we continue about that and so on. Otherwise, those were the issues which I just wanted to raise and discuss. Thank you very much, members, and everyone else which you are here. We will meet next week on our normal meeting. Thanks very much.
Yeah.